Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome. You're tuned into Life is a Sacred Journey. Every week, we bring a new perspective to aging and caregiving. Here is your host, Michelle Pope.
Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you are in the virtual late neighborhood of Life is a Sacred Journey. I am your host, Michelle Pope, and it is so good to be here with you this morning. I am always in love with Friday mornings. I did something really cool for you this morning on the way out of the house. I picked some roses for you. So if you don't live in a place where you have roses, I am so blessed. I am a gardener, as you all know. And I love my roses. They're in quite a lovely. They are blooming magnificently. So I'm sharing them with you to put a smile on your face because this world has been so ugly in this last month. I don't even want to talk about it because it'll make me cry. But, you know, we get angry and we get upset with each other, but there's still beauty happening around us. So take time away from the ugly of the world and find some beauty in your life so you can smile. You'll feel better about it, and you'll get rid of some of that anxiety and crap that we're carrying around. It's been a long 13 months, my friend. So go find some nature somewhere. Hug a dog. I don't know. Whatever you need to do, but put a smile on your face because you deserve it, okay? All right, so I'll put these here so you can see them. They smell wonderful, too. I have allergies, and I shouldn't have them here at all, but I don't care. I will suffer through my allergies because I think they're magnificent. So thank you so much for joining us here at Life is a Sacred Journey. Hit the share button. Do all of that kind of stuff that you do. Good morning to all of you that come back every single week. I can't believe that you do it. But I thank you, and I'm grateful. This morning, I'm excited because, as you know, I have been doing the podcast now for almost a decade. So we started off with Blog Talk Radio, where it was just my voice. I was totally happy there because I like my privacy, and I like people not being in my business in that way. Because I'm a private kind of girl. That's why I never say where I live. If you notice, I never tell you where I live, but see. But we did a radio podcast, and I invited Ashton Applewhite to come on and talk about ageism. So we never physically saw each other, but we heard each other's voices, and of course I went online and saw her picture, and I'm sure she did the same by me. Fast forward. I get an email, oh my gosh, 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, and it says the oldschoolclearinghouse.com. And I see Ashton's name there, and I'm curious. And then it says, you're invited. So I'm like on fire. I'm like, so Ashton's inviting me to something. And I get invited to this experience of ageism advocates from across the country, and I think the world. I think there were international folks there, and it was so exciting. Attached to that was an invitation where the World Health Organization, you know, they have been talking about ageism, age friendly. You know, I've brought this to you, age friendly communities, all of that. And I got to get up at like 4 a.m. in the morning to be a part of this wonderful press conference saying, yes, ageism is killing us. It's affecting the quality of our lives. And Ashton is not new to the game. She has been talking about this and has been raising the word ageism, which, you know, when you say it to people, they look at you kind of weird because they don't really know what you're talking about, because ageism can go back and forth the way we as elders treat our young people sometimes, disgraceful. We treat them like they have no knowledge. Well, they have knowledge. They just haven't lived as long as we have, you know. Then you move to the middle life, and then we start talking about it like the middle life. Oh, my gosh. And then we move to elderhood. You know, I work with seniors, and we treat them like they're these frail, broken people, and then please don't have dementia, because then you become invisible. So Ashton has spent She didn't fall into being a writer. She didn't want, yeah, I'll have her tell you her story. But then there's another book that I'm not going to, you know, today we will hit on it, that she wrote about, you know, when you get divorced and how you're treated. There it is, Cutting Loose. There it is. And my goodness, those who know me, because there's some of you who know me personally, 22 years ago in June, I got divorced. And I was treated like I wasn't smart. I remember when I had to buy a house and somebody said to me, well, why didn't you check divorce? I'm like, because that's none of your damn business. I got the money to buy the house. What does that have to do with who I am? Oh, your credit score. Oh. So we're going to talk about all these things, and I just want to tell you that Ashton is this is her purpose, that she's living out her purpose, and she sees these things, and I made a mistake last week when I told you that she had bleached her hair before she wrote this book and was inspired by that bleaching. I made a mistake. That was Michelle Pope adding what I wanted it to be in my brain. You know how I live. And it wasn't that way. Completely the opposite. But I'll have her, you know, a little bit, Ashton. And we don't really want to get into that today. We just really want to get into ageism because I want to help all of us begin to have that conversation in the neighborhoods, the nooks and valleys where we live, with the people around us. So, Ashton, welcome to Life is a Sacred Journey. I am so thankful that our paths have crossed again in our lives. And let's start with the definition of ageism, because, again, you know, I think it's a new word, as you outline in This Chair Rocks, a manifesto against ageism. This is a great book. You see, the Popa, anybody who knows me, if you come to my house, all my books look like this. It's great read. Go on Amazon, get this book. It'll be at your house by tomorrow morning. You can read it over the weekend. It's a great read, but it also shares some of the concepts that you know we've been talking about ageism, caregiving, and all of that. Okay? All right. So you'll see this book again, and I'm sure Felicia will put it back up for you. All right. So ageism, Ashton, this ugly thing that I don't even remember the word being in my vocabulary, you know, when I was in college and growing up and becoming the woman I am today, but now it's a part of my paradigm and my construct. So tell us about ageism.
The word was invented in 1968 by a wonderful man. I was just looking up at his picture. I have it as a little totem here, named Robert Butler, who coined it very deliberately to piggyback on sexism and racism, because it was just as second wave feminism and the civil rights movement were really gaining ground. It did not get the same traction until recently, but it really is happening now. Mm. The dictionary definition is discrimination and stereotyping on the basis of age. We are being ageist anytime we make an assumption about someone or a group of people on the basis of how old we think they are. And I'm so glad you brought up the point that it cuts both ways, because it is any judgment. And older people do bear the brunt of it because we live in this youth-obsessed culture, mm-hmm. but younger people are affected by it too. So it really does cast a shadow across our whole lives.
And in the discussion of ageism in the places, the platforms where you are, you're bringing the discussion forward to help us to see what, to help us to understand what.
Well, to help us understand, I mean, it sort of depends on where the person themselves stands, to help us understand that like racism and sexism and homophobia, it is a prejudice on against people on the basis of something that we cannot change about ourselves. That I'm sure you've talked about intersectionality on your podcast, which yes. came out of black feminists reacting to the fact that back then in the 60s and 70s, white feminists did not ignore the fact that black women faced additional forms of discrimination. Mm-hmm. So all these forms of prejudice intersect, compound, depend on each other.
Yes.
But until recently, age hasn't been considered a category of discrimination. It hasn't gotten as much attention. And so one of the things that became apparent to me during this difficult last 13 months, thanks in large part to the amazing work of Black Lives Matter, but also to the pandemic itself, that it just became increasingly clear that wanting the world to be free of any form of prejudice means mobilizing against them all. And that when we do chip away at any of them, we chip away at the fear and ignorance that underlie them all. Mm-hmm. Although I do want to say it's always problematic to compare isms. You get into the oppression Olympic, and anything you can do against any of them helps erode all of them, but racism is embedded in the culture in this country in a uniquely ugly way that I do think requires separate and distinct effort to address.
Oh, wow, Ashton. You just said something that's resonating deeply in my heart right now, because I have been in a conversation in the last 2 weeks around this very thing where, my Asian and Pacific Islander siblings are saying, I get it that they're angry and that they want to speak to their oppression and pain. But what I've been trying to say is exactly what you're saying. We need to eradicate all the isms. I actually forgot my pen. I have a pen with all of the isms listed on it. Because I just feel like we get in the thing, like, okay, I'm a woman, but I'm not white, so okay, I can meet Ashton halfway, but on the other half, we're gonna debate and fight. When in fact, as a collective, we have to eradicate a system that was deliberately built so that this cross debate could happen forever, and people don't.
That's what prejudice does. It exists to pit us against each other, and a very sort of easy example or relatively neutral example is stay-at-home moms arguing with moms in the paid workforce about who's a better mom. Can women have it all rather than joining forces to close the gender wage gap
right.
So that women can choose whether or not to stay home. The reason the gender wage gap has barely closed in the last 15 years or since the dawn of time, is because it is profitable. Because we live under capitalism, and companies benefit when Italian workers are fighting with Polish workers, an example from the last century, or older workers against younger workers. How can we compete for those jobs rather than organizing to get a fairer shake together? We are stronger together.
Yes, and what one of the paradigms that I love is, I think it's in Belgium, and they have one model here in the United States. It's in Oregon. I need to go to Oregon. But it's where housing is built for seniors, but they also have a, if millennials, young people come and live and have peer relationship with the seniors, they can live there for free while they're in college. What a concept. Instead of building buildings that are also focused by age, because there's a big market now for millennial housing where you put it near BART stations or your mass transit or whatever. New York's a little different because it's been built up, but they're doing that here. And the reality is you should have done that for your seniors too.
There's a lot of energy. I think you mentioned age-friendly communities. The better name for that would be, and it came out of the World Health Organization originally, and their vision was progressive and mixed age, is all age friendly.
Yes.
And it's back to pitting us against each other. You know, it's framed as, why are we doing this expensive stuff for old people? And then the thought balloon is, who are going to die soon when we could spend it on kids? False equation.
Yes.
The things that make a workplace good for older people are the same things that make it good for younger people. That's the underlying principle of universal design. And, you know, if it's easy to use if you have arthritis, it's easy to use if you don't have arthritis, right? Or, curb cuts.
Right.
They were designed for people in wheelchairs. Well, skateboarders use them and delivery people use them. So, and the stigma goes away once it becomes universal. I think it's really important to sort of zoom out when in the context of ageism to sort of introduce age and age bias into the conversation by pointing out that it is not legal or ethical to allocate resources by race or by sex. It happens because it's capitalist patriarchy, but it is not okay. We know it's not okay. And that it is equally unacceptable to pit the interests of the old against the young.
Yes.
So when that line of argument comes up, say, whoa, you wouldn't say, oh, let's give the ventilators to black people instead of to white people.
Right.
You
That's
know,
right.
It's not okay to say them to young people instead of old people.
Which they did during COVID.
I think they did in Italy.
Yeah.
You know, it was got really scary, and I was up on my like high horse, like, you can't do this stuff, and I'm always learning.
Yeah.
You know, then I read more and realized that you know, these poor people on the front line in medical services, they didn't want to, you know, kill
make that
people.
Choice. Yeah.
They
had
to make decisions really fast.
Yeah.
And age is easier to assess than underlying health. However, back to zooming out again, the issue is not whether it's better or worse to save the life of an old person or a young person. The issue is there should be more damn ventilators.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It is a system that has defunded hospitals, that has left people in rural areas in the lurch, that doesn't pay healthcare workers enough so they have to work umpteen jobs.
That's right.
Et cetera, et cetera. It is systemic, the problem.
And as you say, then it cuts across the lines then when it comes to federal funding. Yes. Yesterday I was in a discussion with a group of people where I said, why is Medi-Cal and the aging services under Medi-Cal always the first things to be cut? Every budget year, we have to go back and say, please do not cut the Medi-Cal benefits to our seniors. But it's the first thing. They go, too much money is being spent. We need to cut. Well, you're only reimbursing at a very small amount, as you just said, to all of the healthcare providers that are caring for this individual. But once they get sick and get into the medical system under Medicare, Medicaid, or whatever, they're going to cost you three times more. What is that old saying? It's a day late and a dollar short.
And there's also this notion that that will like only affect sad, sick old people who are going to die soon. But if your grandmother is sick, it affects you. If your mom can't, you know, she's probably working full time, but if she's not, maybe she watches your kids some of the time, so you can go to your job. It is this web of interconnection.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so a brutal example of it was, I mean, COVID exposed, you know, so much around racism, but also around ableism. I started talking more about that. Ableism is discrimination and prejudice against people with disabilities.
Right.
And a tremendous amount of what we think of as ageism, our fear of getting older and our apprehension,
ableism,
is around what might happen to our brains or our bodies. And that's actually ableism. Think about the original messaging a year ago. Don't worry. This virus is only going to kill the old and the sick.
Yeah.
Sick being a placeholder for disabled.
Right.
And we are now seeing. I mean, imagine if we had known from the beginning that young and healthy people would be affected too. We would have rallied. And this is not just me. The director of the World Health Organization said the same thing. It is the lack, the tardy global response is because of this conception that the lives of older and disabled people, which can and do overlap, although they're not the same, are of less value. And the whole world is paying a hideous cost for that right now.
And we repeat, it's only a repeat of what we did and how we reacted with the AIDS epidemic as well, where we sat back and said, well, it's not affecting those of us that are living our lives the way we think is proper, so we're just going to sit back and wait and see. And then when it flipped over, then all of a sudden it became something that we were worried about and that we needed to find a cure for very immediately. And so we need to look at that paradigm or that something in our DNA, around that kind of thing. And I think it's a humanity and a social justice issue that we need to bring those things up. And that's what you're doing with the old school clearinghouse. What is that? That's exciting to me. And you must have had a dream or something and said, I need to do this. So talk about that.
It wasn't a dream, but I had an idea. I'm laughing because we were wondering what to name it. And like, no one knows what a clearinghouse is, but we stuck with it. A clearinghouse is a place, and it's an old word, you know, days of clipper ships where they piled the tea into the clearinghouse, and then when the tea got sold, it moved out of the clearinghouse.
Yeah.
This is a clearinghouse for ideas. It is a thing, a place, in this case, a place on the internet that things move in and out of. And it is, I just want to say, oldschool.info.
.com
or .org because the others were taken. So oldschool.info.
Okay.
And it came out of an idea I had way back when, probably 5 years ago, which is I thought, wouldn't it have been amazing if for the women's movement there had been a central repository where you could find the best books, the best, there were no podcasts back then, but, you know, the best podcasts, the best videos, and each other. And so it would be a hub of, activists and advocates and just people, ordinary people. It's designed for the general public to find resources that were reputable. No fake news. Reputable scholarship things that, you know, because a lot of stuff that purports to be anti-ageist is actually ableist.
Yes.
It promotes this notion like you're aging well if you can look and move like younger people. And that's actually ages. I'm happy to talk about that later.
Yes.
So I found two fabulous collaborators to build it with me. Launched it 3.5 years ago now.
Wow.
And it has grown by leaps and bounds. We've gotten some grant funding. We started to host these convenings like the one you attended. So if you want to do that, sign up for our monthly newsletter. We will never give your email away. We will never spam you. It's just a monthly newsletter to say here's what's new this month. And also we have consciousness raising guides. I'm happy to talk about why consciousness raising is so important.
Yes.
The one we issued at the end of the year was called Ageist, Racist, Who Me, about the way ageism and racism intersect in our lives. I should be working right now on Ageist, Sexist, Who Me for So we develop our own resources. We do host events, but everything on the site except the books is free for download. You are welcome to take anything we've made to make it your own. We give you the tools. You could hire us to give it one time and see how we do it and then do it yourself. It's all about taking this message out in your own way on your own terms.
Oh, and so please, Ashton, repeat the tag.
Oldschool.info.
Okay, oldschool.info. Okay.
Yeah, and my website is thischairrocks.com, and you can see, you know, it links to it. So,
it does
and,
link, yeah.
Oldschool at oldschool_info on social media, or follow me and you'll see me when I'm at thischairrocks.
And so for a lot of our followers who are nonprofit leaders in the elder care world, we're looking at ways to change our organizations. We're lifting up conversations that we didn't have before. So, you know, please, this is a resource for you, for the collective, because one of the things that we have to do as leaders is we always have to keep ourselves in check. Dr. Pearl, who is a wonderful, he raised that for me, that yes, we can make mistakes. I make mistakes all the time, but looking into the mistake to figure out what was the catalyst for it. Maybe I was just not even caring in that moment, and that's human and that's real.
No, I just didn't know.
Or I didn't know.
I mean, I had this. I came up with this formulation that I was so pleased with myself that I'm ageless is to ageism as I'm colorblind is to racism.
I know. I saw that. Yes.
And I thought that was brilliant.
It's brilliant.
And a little while later, a black ally called me out, and she said, "I feel uncomfortable because you are, you know, appropriating the black experience and in a way that's not okay."
Yeah.
And I did all the things. This is embarrassing. I have a post on my blog, which is thischairrocks.com/blog. You can read it, called Ageless, Clueless, I Goof. I got defensive. in my own head. To her, I did have the good grace to say, I'm sorry, let me think about this.
Yeah.
And, but I was like, the person who first said that to me was black. Like, how could it be wrong? And and I'm not comparing isms. I'm comparing ways of thinking about isms. I did all the white supremacist shit of feeling, you know, icky, you know, and angry and defensive. And then I was like, oh, crap, I made a mistake.
But Ashton, you know, that I honor that, because that is one of the things that, you know, when you do this racism work, which I've been in the last 13 months more than I could ever have thought that I would have been. It is about that. It's about feeling what you felt, though, and living into that moment, like, whoa, and then going back in. Don't let that be the thing, you know, because I have people who said, well, I had a really bad experience, and the person didn't react the way I thought, and I'm just going to, no, you got to go right on back in there. It's like that bicycle that you fell off of when you were 7 years old,
yeah,
that Christmas morning.
Be grateful, which I am. I mean, I can talk about, you know, age forever and sexism forever, but I do get nervous and stammery around race because I'm embedded in white supremacy.
Yeah.
And but I am grateful that I have allies of color who say, yo, you need to, you screwed up. I am genuinely grateful for that. That part's actually pretty easy for me.
And I can see that. You're that kind of person. But for those people that, you know, they stay in that place.
It doesn't feel good.
It doesn't feel good. I have a person right now that says they're tired of hearing about Black Lives Matter. You know, they
get used to it.
And I had to say to them, well, I'm sorry that you feel that way, because acknowledging that person's feelings, but imagine being almost 64 years old and never not known racism.
I've never known it. We can step away, but people of color never get to step away, and we need to do the work.
Yeah. So, and we need to do the work with ageism. So let's talk about this whole thing around this intersection that I see in sexism and ageism, where we compare. Kaiser had a wonderful campaign about 5 years ago where they said the new, how did they word it? The new 40, if you're 60, you're really the new 40 or the new 50 or something like that. And I thought that was icky, but they had, you know, people in their 60s and 70s living vibrantly, looking like doing activities in the way that you would see a millennial in a similar advertising. So there was no wow. I was offended by it because
I'm glad. I mean, a lot of New York City, my hometown, just started an anti-ageism campaign. Did they consult me? No. I mean, I'm such a big shot.
Yeah.
But you know what they called it? Ageless New York. Oh. Ageless is ageist. To say, to aspire to agelessness is to strip us of our years.
Yeah.
A friend on social media commented, I thought this was great. She said, trying to fight ageism with a campaign that's touting agelessness is like fighting a fire with kerosene. And all the examples of older people, they have great stories, and they are very diverse, which is fantastic.
Yep.
But they are all about older people who are exemplifying age by succeeding at looking and moving like younger versions of themselves. And
yes,
the problem with that is manifold. It sets us up to fail, because sooner or later, shit's going to fall apart.
Right.
You know, you are not, even if you, and no judgment, but say you have, you know, tons of plastic surgery, eventually things are going to sag. You know, these are only stopgap measures.
Right.
What often goes unaddressed is that these measures take either money, leisure costs money, gyms cost money, you know, fancy cosmetics cost money, and luck. Luck.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
the way we age is hostage to so many factors that are out of our control.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of campaign, and last but not least, something we already touched on, it is ableist. It is saying you are aging the right way. There's no right way to age. You can't blow it. You know, if you wake up in the morning, you're doing fine. is at the expense of everyone who has cognitive impairment, who has arthritis, who has to use a wheelchair, or at the expense of everyone who might have to someday, which means all of us. It just puts that scary stuff into the corner where we all know it's there and makes it more fearsome and more stigmatized, and that harms us all.
Well, and it creates a market. For instance, I'm going to go into to a part in here about sexism, where that intersection happens, and I was looking after reading that chapter again. It's like, oh my gosh, you know, how many people have had heart attacks from Viagra? How many? And it's just like, what did we? Why? I get it. Sex is fun, but at the end of the day, then you're saying to an older person, people make choices. You make a choice for your life. But when you're saying to somebody, you take this pill and you will act and be like you were when you were 20-something, are you kidding me? You really at 60 want to be boinking like you're 20? That is insane.
I just heard a great phrase for that women as we age are supposed to continue to look good.
Okay.
Then, you know, it's all passive. It's about being admired. Which gives, of course, the power to the gazer. It's very, very passive, very patriarchal. Men are supposed, I just saw this phrase yesterday, play hard and stay hard. And I think two points about sex. Lots of people, your libido does decline, although some people stay really horny and some people weren't all that horny to start with.
Right.
It's really important not to feel like you have to be sexually active in order to succeed, right? It's one of those metrics. There are loads of people who just decide, you know, I spent a lot of time and energy doing that when I was younger, or perhaps you never did, and I'm going to put my energy elsewhere. Totally cool.
Totally cool.
If you want to be remain sexually active, sex is a perfect example to my mind. You know, we can always do the things that were really important to us. We find a way to do them until we kick the bucket. But we don't always do them the way we did when we were 20. And to my mind, sex is a perfect example of something, you know, I had a lot of sex when I was 20, but that wham bam stuff was nowhere near as pleasurable as the sex I learned to ask for.
Yes.
Later on. So it's harder for men, obviously, because male performance is judged more, you know, does the guy have a hard on or not?
Yeah.
And of course, your identity and your sense of yourself is bound up in that. And it is hard to embrace a different notion, but accepting our aging requires that we do.
Yes. And I had an experience when I went to Bali, 2016, I think it was, and I went into a village where I stayed with folks that, you know, I never travel and go into hotels and things like that. I try to stay with the culture, and I had an opportunity to do that, and the elder woman of the village wore her sarong with no top. So I come out of my beautiful place that they had set up for me, and again, I'm still got my American sensibilities happening in my head, and, you know, they live in me. And I come around the corner, and my interpreter is with me. She's got a cigar in her mouth, you know, and she's sitting there, and of course, my eyes went boink, and the interpreter started laughing. She started talking, and the interpreter started laughing. And I said, okay, what did she say? And she said, she wants me to ask you, have you never seen breasts before? And I said, I saw mine this morning. And she said, yes, but you covered them up. And I thought, wow. You know, we live in our own environments and our own stories, and then we go into other people's story and we want to make it their, we want our story to be their story. I had such an incredible experience, and after two or three days, of course, my eyes didn't do that, right? My eyes didn't do that.
And but we are shaped by our cultures, of course.
We really are. But what I really started to see was the beauty in her body. I mean, Ashton, her body was magnificent, and when I started meeting her children and I started thinking of her breasts in a very different way, I thought, those breasts have carried her. Those breasts have nurtured her children. Those breasts, you know what I mean?
They have been. And if you think the fact that she was comfortable with her body, back to sex, if, you know, for the purpose, if the goal for the purpose of this sentence is to be sexually active, if that's something that's important or you inspire, think about your friends who are.
Yeah.
They are not the thinnest. They're not the youngest. They're not the prettiest. They're not the whitest.
Right.
They are the ones who know their lovers are lucky. They are the ones who, you know, are right.
So perfect.
You know,
yeah.
And part of that is being comfortable in their bodies. You know, I there's a lot I still don't like about my body, but I sure like it more than I did when I was 14. You know, so that sort of confidence in that way is the ultimate aphrodisiac, and women. We are judged for how we look from the minute we come out of the shoot and the minute we start to show any signs of aging. And honestly, younger women experience it too. If you are young and cute, then you're not taken seriously, right? If you're young and not cute, then you are, you know, it's all about our appearance, and none of it is with our best interests in mind. It's shaped by a culture that wants us to spend money on stuff that doesn't work, that wants us to compete for the male gaze, and that sets us up to fail, so that the minute you can't, you know, maintain this impossible standard.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Supermodels are miserable for the most part. I mean, I don't know squat about being a supermodel. From the little that I see, you know, that they're busy miserable because they have a freckle here, mm-hmm. or because they haven't eaten anything except a stalk of celery in 3 weeks, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, as long as we're focused, I think we have a lot to learn as anti-ages from the body acceptance movement. And, you know, the huge look more generously at ourselves and each other, especially as women, and we will be a lot of the way down the road. It's hard.
And then as women, what happens when we come out of that space, then we have the ability to be, I love being with my women friends, you know, and I'm not when I say to them, oh my gosh, that outfit looks great on you, it doesn't mean that I'm saying to them, oh, it's great because it makes you look younger or whatever. The outfit really looks good on them. And
that is a very good looking jacket that you're wearing.
Thank you.
I have been admiring.
Thank you. And it's older, you know, and it's vintage, you know. But again, you and I could have those conversations and it not be about my age, about any of that. It's about, I love fashion. I'm a fashion, and so I'm always going to look and say, oh my God, I dig that shirt. I dig those shoes. I dig whatever. I stop young people. I'm close to UC Berkeley, and some of these little fashionistas walking down the street, and I say to them, you look phenomenal today. You know, it's not, and I see the look on their face that, oh my God, I've been seen.
But there's always a little double take. I mean, in New York, it's like, is this person going to, you know,
attack me,
ask me for money or stab me? But I'm old, I'm female, and I'm white. So that is like the cloak of how can I possibly be, you know, be a menace to anyone, which is slightly offensive in its own way.
It is slightly offensive, but still.
Well, yeah, maybe I could too be a menace to you. You are styling, you know, or fabulous look, and you can see, like, understand, like, who is this person? Oh, go across their face,
which
we're now all learning to read from.
Yes. And now, talk a little bit about how you feel this whole paradigm now of ageism. We're starting to talk about it. I like the idea of the intersections of all the isms when we go large out into the humanity, zeroing in on all of these others, and ageism is a big one for me by the very nature of where I've chosen to spend all of my life for the last 24 years. But what is media, and we talked a little bit about the medical system. We surfaced the media a little bit. But media is playing, I mean, I think I've only seen one show, two shows, maybe, Even the Golden Girls had some ageism in it, but it was a good start to something.
Representation, seeing older people, seeing disabled people, seeing black and brown people, that's a start, an essential, really important first start. So the first thing to look for and to insist on is representation. You know, there is a lot of squawking around the dearth in Hollywood, around the dearth of roles for older women.
Yes.
And also squawking, and I don't mean squawking derogatorily at all, about, the horrible practice of casting white people in roles that were written for people of color, for example. I was just reading a piece this morning about racism in Superman. Originally, like, he's played by a white guy. He used to be very progressive, but, like, he's an alien. He was born on, not Krypton. He was, like, born on another planet. Why does he have to be Caucasian? You know, I never thought of that.
I never thought of that either. Oh, my gosh.
Right. So there's citizens everywhere. Representation is really important. If you see something ageist, I mean, Saturday Night Live did yet another hideously ageist open the other way. You can send it in to my Yo Is This Ageist blog, which I modeled on this fantastic blog called Yo Is This Racist, with permission, which has been around a long time. But even more than sending it in to me, because there's just one of me, and honestly, I'm really busy. At the same time, write that letter to the editor. Call Saturday Night Live. Say, that shit is not okay. We need to take action. If someone says, something that is ageist, say, what do you mean by that?
Yeah.
That is a really good comeback because it's not, it's not in your face, which is, you don't want to put someone on the defenses, but, are you retired? What do you mean by that? Or, why would you ask?
Yeah.
Why is even more, a little more aggressive. But we want to put the ball back in their court. You know, someone is saying, well, we have to close the senior center because we need a new nursery school. How come you're framing it like that? Don't you think if we bought like a 16th less of one stealth bomber, we could have both? It's a false equation, right? So just put it out there. Important, the tool that catalyzed the women's movement was consciousness raising, which is when women came together and compared notes and realized that things they had been thinking of as personal problems. My kids aren't big enough. My husband holds all the money, to be very micro about it. I'm goofing a little bit.
No, but yeah.
I'm not respected. I'm not heard. I'm not hired. I'm harassed. Were not personal problems. They were widely shared political problems that we could come together and do something about. And that is a really, really powerful tool because it starts by, you have to look at your own attitudes about the prejudice to start with, in this case, age and aging, and most of us are just starting to do that, but we can't challenge bias unless we're aware of it. So I just want to say that on Old School is a guide to starting a consciousness-raising group around age bias called Who Me? Ageist.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and this is something, I mean, it's a big ask about, and there's also ageist and racist, and ageist and sexist will be along as soon as I find 5 minutes to work on it.
I know.
Pick your group, but try to make it absolutely mixed age.
Okay.
And
yeah.
If you can make it, racially diverse, socioeconomically diverse is really hard. I think that's the hardest barrier to cross.
Mm-hmm.
But the more people, I mean, this is why diverse companies make better decisions and make more money. The more perspectives you can bring to the conversation, whether it's about how to sell more Cheetos or how to end racism,
right,
the better a decision you will arrive at.
Yes. And then around this whole, I love the idea Ashton has brought up a lot of ideas today, and I want to, really good stuff. I want to make sure we talk, you take away a couple of things, like the universal design conversation that we had earlier on, thinking about that as we reopen. We're starting to relaunch and to reopen our organizations. Yes, go ahead.
Quick interjection
on
that.
Yes, please.
As we, people with disabilities ask employers for decades for accommodation to work remotely. COVID happens, magically, those accommodations become available because the health of the general public is at risk. One thing we can do to be a good ally to the disability community is to insist with your employers that those accommodations remain permanent to lower barriers for employment for everyone.
Keep going, Michelle. Ashton, thank you, because I've been thinking about that myself, that, you know, I have sciatic problems that I didn't have before. And again, this is not a complaint, because I still walk, I still do what I need to do, but I have them. And the reality is working from home is a lot more comfortable when I do it in my schedule based on whether or not I really need to be here at the office. And that has nothing to do, again, with aging. It has to do with I want to actually live and be in control of the quality of my life.
Right. There's tons of younger people who have the same desire, perhaps for the same reason, perhaps for completely different reasons.
My son at 32, I promise them I don't talk about them a lot, but I will say, he loves working from home. He, for the very same reason, he was driving, you know, an hour and a half to his place, and now the company, a big company, has said, we don't think we need to bring you all back, because they're saving money on rent and things of that nature. So universal.
But if your company does change that policy, look into and listen to which employees are the most affected, and see if there are people who can use support from someone who isn't up against the same kind of discrimination.
Exactly. And then hiring. This is another thing that I just talked to AARP about. Hiring practices, hiring people who can come in and have experience and maybe mentor your succession plan. You know, these are the kinds of things that we don't think about and we don't honor that, you know, we just rip people out of the construct of the organization, and they take all this wisdom and knowledge with them, when if you made them a part of the succession plan or even said, you know what, do you want to cut your hours and still be here and do this? I mean, instead of thinking about, because you wrote about this and you said it earlier, terminating the old to make a space for the new.
That is one of the many prevalent myths, that old people take jobs away from young people.
Yeah.
It's a little bit true in academia, where there is a fixed and small number of tenure track positions that you can, you know, have that you cannot be let go from ever.
Mm-hmm.
But it's true if there's a recession and the only job is at Starbucks, you're going to have everyone competing for it. But that's a labor market problem, not a too many old people problem.
Right.
It's the fallacy of the lump of labor, and it's another example of this scarcity thinking, pitting people against each other. Everyone is scrabbling for some shitty, ill-paid job instead of saying, yo, where is the subsidy for the other 90 people who aren't going to be the two in line to get the crappy job at Starbucks? We need help for everyone, old and young alike, able-bodied, disabled. Where are the supports for all of us from birth to death?
Yes. And I really want to ask this because it just popped up in me. So do you think that it's because we're afraid of death also that plays a role in ageism? Or is it because we're afraid to get there?
I like that question, and I do get it, and I remember agonizing for months over a post, which is called, and my blog is searchable, it's called "There's No Excusing Ageism."
Okay.
And it tackles some of the reasons why people say ageism is more light, L-I-T-E, than other forms of prejudice.
Uh-huh.
And the bigger problem with that is there is no win in comparing any form of bias to any other. It's a trap. But I have thought about this a lot. We elders are reminders of mortality. That is true.
Okay.
So in that sense, yes. But if you look at you or me, you know, viewers might think we're ancient, but they don't look at us and think, oh, those women are dying, right? Dying is a discrete biological event that happens at the end of all this living. And I think that while there is a tiny grain of that, there's all sorts of cultures where older people are venerated, you know, that don't. So I think that the argument, oh, ageism is natural. Watch out for that natural word. It's used to, that was another thing I had to learn the hard way. But, you know, it's used to excuse a lot of things that in this context, are socially constructed. We are all afraid of dying.
Mm-hmm.
As people get older, they become less afraid of dying.
I'm noticing that.
It's really interesting to learn. But, you know, it's why we have religion. It's why we have Bach sonatas. But fear of aging is not universal, and aging is something that happens from the minute we are born. So this extreme gerontophobia is the fancy word for it. You know, this really fear of aging, apprehension at becoming like older people is made up. And it is reinforced by a capitalist and patriarchal culture.
And oh gosh, I could talk to you all day. You're amazing. But when you talk about changing the consciousness, this is real for me too, because in our consciousness, as we're putting together paradigms, buildings, structures that we aid our seniors with or our elders with, then they begin to look like our consciousness. Does that make sense to you? Like I walk into some assisted livings and I'm like, who the hell decided that these people need to live in this?
Yeah.
It's all gilded. It's like a gilded cage. But
okay,
there's no...
It's beige and teal.
And the garden is way in the back of the building, and the people with the dementia are at the end of the hall, locked away, and you can look in.
Why they're locked away is one reason is because the people in senior living have not thought about their own internalized ableism, and they do not want reminders. You know, the people who run the homes are, maybe they're more advanced in this way, maybe they're not. You know, a lot of people in senior living are really ageist for a reason I have sympathy with.
Oh, absolutely.
They're doing really important work of caring for people at the most disabled and diminished physically and cognitively end of the spectrum. And it's a really hard job to reconcile that old age with the old age you wish for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But when we, you know, when the residents of the joint say, look, we don't want any walkers and wheelchairs cluttering up the joint, or, you know, awful, like eighth grade girl stuff about, like, if so-and-so starts using a walker, we don't want them at our table. Aside from the inhumanity of it, it's like, you could be in a wheelchair next week. Don't you want to sit at the table?
Yeah. And this whole, because we create those environments for folks. You know, when we create the environment, like our programs are all open. People can wander around. They can do whatever they want. What we did is we cast the periphery wider, so that their safety periphery is so wide that they don't feel like they're confined. Because I'm a claustrophobic, and so I when I went down there, I was like, oh, no, we got to move this thing around. Open it up so people can feel like they're not being imprisoned somewhere, because that's a terrible feeling. And as you get older and you're dealing with dementia, it can cause depression, isolation, and all of that in a space that you're claiming is nurturing. And so we have to be very, very careful with all of that, you know. And I, Ashton, I know you've got things going on behind the scenes there, and you're very busy. But the last question I have for you is, being an ally and being an advocate can be really, really scary for a lot of people. I mean, I think our young people, our young adults in the world today, I know my millennial son and my Generation Z daughter, I have learned more from them in the last year about activism. I thought I knew it because I was a part of the marches and all of that back in the day. But they taught me so much more. So how do we get, help us to be better advocates. Give us your last words of wisdom, how to be an ally, how to be an advocate across the trajectory of this wonderful life, that if we get to live it without people getting in our way with all these isms, oh, my gosh. I was thinking about that. That's my pondering coming up for the next couple of weeks.
Yeah.
What if all the isms were gone and a human being got to live fully their existence?
Yeah, no kidding.
Whoa. What kind of person?
I know. I think, you know, there's this new curve of happiness that shows that people are happiest at the beginnings and the ends of their life. Imagine what that curve would look like if in a non-ageist world. It would. I don't know. It would never even go down in the.
I don't think it would. I think it would just
be like this.
Yeah.
You know, I think one of the many things I've learned in the last year is you can't say I'm an ally. The person or the cause you're trying to help has to decide that you are, right? It's up to them to decide whether your effort. So figure out a way that you can help that person or that cause, whether it's by donating money or patronizing their business or supporting them if some, you know, jerk across the table is saying, you know, giving them a hard time, you know, show up for them, which could be, I'm because it's been such an awful week, you know, where I go with that is, you know, if you see someone being, you know, attacked or harassed on the street, if you have the courage to pull out your camera or, you know, be a witness. So there's any number of ways. And, you know, as an anti-ageism advocate, think about your own attitude towards age and aging, number one. Mm-hmm. Think about how you use the words old and young. Do you use old to mean insert good thing, you know, sexy or with it, and old to mean achy or, you know, incompetent? Well, mm-hmm. you can feel achy and incompetent at 13, right? So start to look at your own habits and just think, since we've had this conversation about how all these things work together, when age is missing from the conversation, put it there. If everyone in a group is the same age, point it out.
Oh, yes. Thank you.
Right?
Yes.
Especially in a business setting, you know, ask, is there a good reason? If you're invited to a social event, and this one's a tough one, but try to break the habit of making a beeline for people your own age.
Ooh. Yeah, you talk a little business. It's a great chapter.
And say, you know, if you're, D&I people, whatever, say, you know, they're all up in getting, you know, black people and Asian people, whatever, say, all right, how about age? How
mm-hmm.
about age?
I'm looking at that now on my board.
Help us hitch age to the intersectional split.
Let us, yes, and that it becomes a part of our thinking, and it also becomes a part of our paradigm when we're thinking about social justice. Because it is a social justice
inclusion
issue.
Inclusion and diversity.
Exactly, for all of us. But there is I love you guys, and I always share with you stuff that I'm doing. I never share with you things that, or to say to you, be me. Because you can't. That's one thing. I'm a unique human being, and I was reared a certain way, and nobody was reared like me, other than my siblings. And even they didn't experience it the same way. And we were raised by the same people, so go figure. So we experience things, though, as Ashton and I have been talking about this morning, and I know some of you are having a real difficult time with this, to understand that the American society was set up for us to be divided. It's a caste system, and we're all playing different roles in it. It's like the Matrix. We're all playing different roles in it.
In ways we aren't aware of.
And we're not, exactly, we're not even aware of it. But in this time of more knowledge, Google, zippity-doo-dahs, we can learn. But I say, read the book, but stop just reading. Talk to people. You know, Ashton, I have some, and don't take this the bad way, my dear Anglo-loving, because I know every time I say something, somebody calls me and goes, well, are you mad at us? No, but you got to stop reading so much and start having dialogue with people. Just like Ashton told you her story. She's come up with this great, it's great. You know, I even thought it was great. But every person looks at everything differently. And there's no right way. But until you have the conversation, you'll never know. I love this book, but I'm having a conversation with Ashton. When my daughter finishes reading it, we'll have a conversation about it. The growth is in gaining the knowledge and then sharing it and then back and forth. Oh, my gosh. Ashton, Old School Clearinghouse, tell us again. Tell us again.
Oldschool.org and thischairrocks.com.
Okay. So, please, my beloved humanity, you know, and this goes out. Ashton, I can't believe there's people in Moldova, Belgium, Italy. There's people in Sweden, all over the world that watch Life is a Sacred Journey, and I wonder why. You know, I always wonder why. And what I realize every single time we're done, it's because we don't come all glossy and all trying to tell people who to be and what to be. We come ground, and we come with our humanity. So I want to thank you for bringing your humanity to. Yeah, I mean, and thank you for the work that you're doing. Thank you for your books. Thank you for inviting me to be a part of your journey and the journey of other advocates worldwide. I consider it an honor and a privilege that my name popped up as someone
to
invite to the experience. So, Ashton Applewhite,
the rematch.
Oh, we have to. We have to. And so, please, guys, this chair rocks. You'll see other ones. The other book. Pick up that book again, Ashton, because I don't have that one with me this morning. Yes.
Why women who end their marriages do so well, just reissued in paperback.
All right. There you go.
All right.
So Ashton,
bye-bye.
Have a great day. Take care
Thank
of yourself.
You.
Bye-bye. So, folks, it is so good to always have someone to join us on Life is a Sacred Journey that really is making a change in the world. And yes, these people are people who come from different spheres and they write books and they do all kinds of things that move the needle in all the isms. But you too, in your own space and your own life, have an opportunity to be the change we all need to see in this world. So as you go out on this Friday morning, please make sure that you do that. Be the change you want to see. Before I let you go, I will remind you that next Saturday, which is April 24th, from 2 to 4 p.m., Alzheimer's Services of the East Bay will be having a virtual wine tasting. We really need your support. Go to our website. We have to raise probably $6,000. It's not a lot. But we do want to raise it so that we can continue during this COVID time. If you are another assisted living or corporation or someone who would like to sponsor a table, the table, virtual tables are $1,000 a piece, and you will get the opportunity to present your organization on Life is a Sacred Journey. I will call you in for an interview, and we will lift you up and what you're doing in the world to change the world. So thank you all so much for your support here at Life is a Sacred Journey. Please hit the subscribe button. It is so important that you do subscribe. We need you to do that. So just hit it and then share, and ask people to hit the subscribe button. Those numbers need to go up. We're trying to increase our viewership and listenership by 1,000 people. So please work with us on that, and please help us partner with us so that we can do that. We're looking to try to do that by the end of May. So thank you. Thank you so much. So much. You're amazing and you're wonderful. Life is a Sacred Journey is here because you come and because it matters to you. And so have a wonderful day in the neighborhood. Have a wonderful weekend. And go out and smell the roses and have a just hug yourself. Be joyful. Peace. See you next week. Bye-bye.